Can we discuss Daniel Radcliffe as Weird Al Yankovic in the trailer that was just released? And his enormous and powerful body.
Was cut.
Was weird. Listen.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm a 41-year-old white man who was overweight in middle school. Of course I like Weird Al. Don't get me wrong. But I don't remember him ever being jacked.
Yeah, but do you ever remember him being shirtless is the follow-up question.
Except in the Rambo bit from UHF.
See, I think that's it.
Is that it?
He wanted me to do it for real? I think this movie, it's a blend. I think it's a biopic and a UHF reboot.
Okay, good.
Oh my God.
It's back. Yeah, go back and watch the trailer with that in mind and tell me that's not true.
It's just, I was watching the trailer thinking, oh boy, it's going to be so good to hear all these fun songs again. And my God, Harry Potter's big, strong body is waking me up. And it's 8 a.m. I'm not ready for this.
This is my coffee.
It might just be a Carrot Top situation where Weird Al was always yolked and we just didn't know.
Maybe.
I think Carrot Top got yolked because he needed to defend himself.
It was a defense mechanism, but this is just, I mean, I love Weird Al, I love the music, but the visual of the boy who lived in that is just too much.
Oh, shit.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Russ Frosting, and I know the best game of the week.
Welcome to the Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in home interactive entertainment. It is a video game club, but just by listening, my friend, you are an official member. Here's your card and your parking. Let me validate that. Oh, take me in. Take me into Nintendo Switch Sports. Ugh. It's just the name does not feel good to say. Have you all noticed this? When you say the name of it, it feels bad to say it.
It was nicer when it was Wii Sports.
Wii Sports.
Like that was
Wii
Sports. That's a nice
it's
ring
just
to
fun
it.
Fun to say.
Who Sports? Sports?
And it wasn't Nintendo Wii Sports.
Yes. Switch Sports is weird.
It's not a good, maybe it's Nintendo Switch is just a bad name for the console.
What is this thing?
Oh, yeah, Chris.
Oh, this thing? Well, Nintendo went and made a sequel to Wii Sports. And I know that there's technically another sequel, Wii Sports Resort, and there's technically a remake on the Nintendo Wii U. But, baby, this is the real sequel. This feels like they decided no longer a tech demo, now a video game. If you can get the online functionality to work.
This may be our most contentious. Hearing that setup makes me think this may be one of the most contentious episodes of the Besties.
I can't wait for it, but I'm going to have to because we got to pay the bills. Then we'll be right back to talk about Nintendo Switch Sports.
So at the outset of just a few moments ago, before the break, Chris Plant described this game as a sequel. To Wii Sports, and I don't agree with that assessment. I know Griffin had some hesitance as well, and this does not feel like a sequel to me. So I'm curious, Plank, can you dive into that?
Why would I say it's a sequel?
Because it's a sequel. What are you talking about?
Let me guess what you're thinking.
Yeah.
This is not a sequel. This is a remake, a reboot maybe even, because it's got tennis and it's got bowling. And those things were in the original game, right? It's also got badminton, volleyball, soccer, and chimbara, or sword fighting, which were not in the original game. So,
Chimbara was in Resort, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. But we're talking about, is this a sequel? Is it a sequel? Is it a reboot or a sequel?
I guess, for me, my impression... And we'll kind of go into what this game actually is. But
and also add online. Online is probably the huge
addition. And it has online. Sure. But predominantly, it's a motion sports game. And there aren't very many of those. This might be the only one that comes out this year, where you're playing through these various games. And obviously, with Wii Sports being a thing that everyone experienced in one way or the other. It was a big deal back then. This to me feels like for the people that do not want to dig out their Wii, which is probably at the bottom of a lake somewhere at this point.
Yeah, sure.
They now have the option to not have to
find it.
And they can play games. They play the games that they love. But it doesn't feel, even though there are new games to this, for some reason it doesn't feel like a sequel. It more or less feels like a quality of life thing where it's like you now have these games that you enjoyed on a platform that actually is a thing in your house. That was my impression of it, at least.
This semantic discussion, fascinating to me. I'm not sure it's the most like accessible place to start the discussion, but I love it. If we get five more minutes, I'm going to say seven more minutes of semantic discussion about remake
of what
versus
a sequel,
sequel
is. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Let's do it this way. There's six games in this thing, and I would say sword fighting is fun, literally about the same thing as the sword fighting mode that was included in Wii Sports Resort, except without like the insane, super fun horde mode.
I didn't play the horde mode.
Oh, it was great. Are you sure, Russ? Think about it. It was really fun.
You would like walk through it was like on rails down a path, and you would just have like several combatants come at you, and they would have the faces of the Miis that you had.
Or pull it from online.
Right. And it was really fun. This one doesn't have that. Just has the one dual mode. But it's that's fun. Me and Henry. Juice and his kids, we all had a good time sort of swatting away at each other with that one. Badminton is small tennis.
Fast tennis.
Back and forth.
In this one, tennis is a little bit slower. It's doubles only. There's no singles mode in tennis, so that's one, they just changed that, but they do have badminton in here for you, and you can kind of hit the badminton to the shuttlecock to go up, or you can smash it down, and that's very fun. And then there is a third net-based experience, which is volleyball, which I do not care for at all, because it is also doubles, and it relies on good teamwork with motion controls, which is a crapshoot, or good teamwork with AI, which... did anybody like volleyball?
I did.
Chris Plant loved volleyball.
I genuinely thought people were going to like this game. And
I enjoy the game. I enjoy the game.
No. Not just the game, but volleyball.
Volleyball was miserable. Please, Plant, explain to me what appealed to you.
And how it differentiates
Just describe how it works.
Yeah.
Sure. So you like, I don't know the terms. It's like you set the ball. Is that right? So what's the first one?
You serve it normally.
Bump, set,
fine.
Spike.
Bump, yes. So let's say they're serving it to you, and then you are the person who's in charge of bumping it. So you the ball comes at you and you bump it up into the air, and then your partner or AI sets it. I'm just describing volleyball.
Yeah, literally.
When you bump it, you like put your hands together kind of like at your waist. When you set it, you put it over your head.
I mean, you're still describing volleyball.
I know, but I'm just trying to describe like the motions of it.
Yeah, sure. Those are the motions.
It's all about how simple do you make it, right? Yeah. And what I liked about volleyball is it's three different motions rather than like most of these games, which are like, okay, just either flail or do the exact same repetitive motion over and over
again. Badminton has a little bit of strategy to it. Like you can hold in the trigger to kind of do it like a soft, like
drop shot
to try and like, position your thing. But like, I don't know. I feel like that was something that you could kind of do in Wii Sports Tennis.
The games that I liked in this bundle are the games that come closest to the motion that you do in real life when you're playing those games. Even though I realize that those motions you were just talking about in volleyball are things that you do in real life volleyball, it still felt pretty removed from the experience of playing actual volleyball. Ditto for soccer for me. I didn't like soccer.
Same.
But the games that I loved, tennis, a lot of fun, badminton, a lot of fun, bowling, a lot of fun.
Yeah, sword play. Yeah,
the sword fighting was like okay for me, but not my favorite.
I think when played two-player, the sword play is a real highlight, and maybe
sword
that makes
really fun with two people,
especially with kids,
because
like they get really fucking into it.
Which mode do you play? Do you play one sword, laser sword, or double sword.
I mean, we were playing with kids, so we weren't trying to complicate things too much. We were just doing a regular regular old sword. But like watching Henry and Charlie just like duke it out, Duel of the Fates style, was like very satisfying.
And that's sort of why I'm surprised that the Plant alluded to this earlier. It's surprised at the emphasis of online for this game, because I think the second you go online, a lot of the magic of this sort of goes away. Yes. And I think this remains a very much a same room, same system kind of experience. I'll just really quickly explain how the online works. You essentially, if you're playing online, you can play with one other person. So if you want to like duo up and then hop online, you can do that. But effectively, you're being matched with random people. You actually do not know for 100% certainty if you're playing a real person or a bot, because they do slide in bots in the mix. But effectively, you jump into the game and then you're playing these various sports. But because, I don't know, there is something that is removed, that not seeing the other person flailing or getting as into it as you are, the games don't have enough depth to make you feel like, wow, I really earned that win. It more feels like just like a trial of like endurance.
The hardcore bowling mode.
I do like bowling, but bowling was in Wii Sports. Bowling was in Wii Sports Resort.
Oh yeah, again, I'm saying the with bowling obstacles. Mode where they add obstacles.
Yeah, I mean that is fun as well.
I would say that feels. Oh, I mean, I'm just talking about like online competitive. Like that is the thing where I feel, oh, I brought a level of skill to this.
There's a mastery to the bowling that is not present in any really of any ones. Of the
well,
other
well,
games?
Maybe it's soccer. There's a soccer mode that feels like really wacky. Oh my gosh, car soccer,
Rocket League. I mean, it feels like slow Rocket League.
I mean,
League,
really slow. Yeah, there's just a lot of really just running, which is soccer. Soccer is a lot of running.
Soccer is a lot of
running. But there is a giant ball.
The big ball is fun. I do wish that was incorporated in real life soccer.
It's interesting. I don't have a ton of thoughts about this game, so I just want to bundle them all up in one. I think this is cool that it exists. I think it's nice to have something that I kind of missed an era that I think would have been great with kids my age, where motion was a much bigger deal. Like they're pretty good at, especially with like intuitive experiences like this, like understanding that if I swing this, it'll make the racket go right. I did it with Cooper. Mm-hmm. She's 4. Charlie obviously gets it pretty easily. She's 7, so it's not a big deal. But I think it's cool that it exists. I think for it to be something that it's like there's a vibe I get, and I might be misreading it. So please tell me. But to me, this feels like kind of a shrug from Nintendo. It kind of feels like offered, and if you want it, okay, but if not, like that, it doesn't seem to be that big of a focus for them. I want, like, the ideal situation for me would be a Nintendo Switch Sports that is like a platform that is constantly being like tweaked and new games and that kind of thing.
Or even like an adventure mode would be kind of neat.
I mean,
or
there's
even
a lot.
A setting that has any character at all, right? Like Wii Sports Resort, one of the best things about it was it takes place on Woohoo Island, which is like really stupid. But then there's like a super chill, like a flight mode where you can just kind of fly all around Pilot Wing style and like check out this dope island resort. Like, this game, you just like press the button and it loads.
Well, you're
up
in a future mall. It should be noted. You are in a future mall.
I guess that's something.
Well, it's not as cool Splatoon. Like, it feels like a little bit
fair.
More mainstream Splatoon. That said, all of this, I think all these are like very fair points.
Goes as far as like with the Chambara, I wanted to turn the timer off because I was playing with a 4-year-old and I was trying to let her win. Or just like have a longer sword fight, but like you can't even do that, like, right? So it's like the level of it's not bad, it's just like so threadbare. I feel like it is not going to have much of an impact, and even for like a party scenario where Wii Sports really shined, I feel like this would not be this feels like more of a novelty than something that's gonna like keep people playing for an extended period of time.
I think all this is like extremely true for us and probably like a majority of our listeners, capital G gamers with a Z at the end. I do think this is not designed with us in mind. I think this is Nintendo doing the thing that they used to do, where they would release a game that was like completely not for the core gaming set. Because this game, an example of this, when I go to like my kid's school, nobody cares about what I do until this week, when suddenly people have all downloaded Switch Sports for their families and revealed one that they even own a Switch. And I think if you like, same with you, if you look online or if you look at Polygon's team, who some of them obviously play games, some of them don't. Some of them are in our entertainment group. Everyone is playing this game and is obsessed with it. So I think like things like, you know, adventure mode or any of those things, would they be great additions? Most definitely. Do I think like they matter to the type of people who want, who remember Wii Sports from 15 years ago? Like, no, not at all.
I agree with that. But I would also say, like, Nintendo has a reputation for providing a lot of value in their purchases. Like, when you think about Breath of the Wild or you think about Mario Odyssey and stuff like that, they tend to build these games. And look, they're going to have post-release content for this. I know golf is being added later. Yeah. So there will be post-release content after the fact. But it just doesn't, like, when I compare this product to Wii Sports, the original Wii Sports that came out, I believe this is $40, I think, if you buy it. It just doesn't seem like that much of a value step up for something that they are now boxing and selling as a game. I completely agree with you that they can get away with not necessarily like boxing and selling a huge upgrade, you know, to go back to the sequel thing. But it just seems a little counter to Nintendo's ethos of like, we're really going to like knock your socks off in terms of the presentation and everything that's being offered and stuff like that.
For me, it's not, this isn't an upgrade. Like there's six games on this thing and I played three of them once or twice and was like, well, I don't want to play that. I don't want to play soccer anymore. I don't want to play volleyball anymore. That's not very fun for me. So I'm not going to play that one anymore. Right. And Wii Sports Resort had, I think, 12 or 13, and sure, you know, canoeing wasn't the most fun, but I would say about, you know, the sword play in that was really fun and way more fleshed out with like more game modes than it is in this one. Disc golf was fun. Archery was fun. Golf was fun. You can't get golf in the, you can't launch with fucking golf, guys.
You say
it's coming in fall 2022. You can't launch with golf. Like, what did you, what's taking so long to get golf in there? Because you've done it once or twice before.
They're playing golf is the problem. That's they're what they're spending
really,
all the time
to really
They need the research.
It just feels less than you want. Like, it really does. I wanted this to be like a big return to form, and it just feels like so bare bones.
And yet. Do want to say, I completely agree with all that. The second that I'm like in it, when I'm playing tennis or when I'm playing badminton, I'm in it in like, I'm standing up, I'm getting it, even though I know that I don't have to, even though I know I could just like do a slight little waggle with the remote, I get into it and it like does transform me. I want it to be more on the edges, like more on the various features and stuff like that. But the actual core of it remains really quite good.
I actually think that's what frustrated me so much though. Like, and in my head, by the way, I was spell frustrated with an R-U-S-S just to help me. It's like a mnemonic device.
Not frustrated?
Frustrated.
I'm Russ frustrated. No, I like, it felt fun to be back doing that again. Like, it works. Like, the when it's on, it's on. And like, that's what made me want, like, wish there was more of it, is because it is working, right? Like, if they released a new Rock Band today and it was really fun, but it had eight songs, you wouldn't be like, well, this is great, because it's still like, you still want more. And I mean, it is a $40 game. Like, I mean, you know, I'm not here, we're not here to like say whether or not it's a good value, but it did feel like I would be moving on from it quicker than I would have otherwise, I think. Go ahead.
I would have preferred a re-release of Wii Sports Resort called Switch Sports Resort or something along those lines. Like, or at least a compilation of the best stuff they've done in Wii Sports, Wii Sports Resorts, and I'll go ahead and say it, Wii Play. Wii Play had some fun shit on. You know what I mean? Like they've done this thing two consoles ago way better. And it is wild to me that they could not at least recapture that.
What about 1-2 Switch?
That's nothing.
That's nothing. Hey, Plant, you think about stuff like this. I want to ask you a question that is tangential to this. Not tangential, it's part of it. I think part of the superpower of Wii Sports is that it was not something where you had to go get a camera and plug it in and get the right amount of space and all this stuff. It's like in native to the console. How do you think the experience is of like the Switch as a platform for this kind of experience?
I think it's great. I was expecting the worst because I previously have had terrible experiences with the Joy-Cons when it comes to motion control. I don't know if anybody played the Mario Golf with Joy-Cons, but it was not great. There is some like mandatory update that you get with this game right from the top, and that does something. And I think the update doesn't even work with some third-party controllers yet.
It does not.
So I would love to know more about the technical side there. But all in all, I found it like totally fine how well it worked. It felt comparable. I don't know if it felt like as good as the Wii Motion Plus, the add-on that they gave to Wii, but it felt like as good as like original Wiimotes for me.
There were for me, like the rubber hit the road with the bowling in Wii Sports Resort, which is where you got the Wii Motion Plus going, because I felt like I had complete control over like the amount of spin I was putting on the ball. Same with golf. Like if I hooked a swing on golf, like I felt it and I knew I fucked it up in that precise way. I don't think you get that exactly with the Switch Joy-Con, but I was also, I would say, pleasantly surprised that it works as well as it does, because I have had similar sort of fidelity problems with those little guys.
Ignoring the accuracy, the fidelity stuff, just in terms of like the actual holding of it, do you prefer holding the Joy-Con or a Wii remote?
With Motion Plus? Definitely the Wii Motion Plus.
I'm not talking about the actual fidelity of it. I'm just like the actual
hand feel of this thing that feels like a fucking lightsaber. Are you kidding me? That shit, with the little condom grip that they slip over it, that's ribbed for my pleasure. You cannot beat that. That is the best feeling shit ever. I was heartbroken when they released, I think it was like the third generation Wiimote that had the Motion Plus integrated in it.
Yeah.
I remember that was a big thing. I think when Skyward Sword came out, you could get it like a special edition with the Zelda Gold controller that had the Wii Motion, so you didn't have that extra bit of like a counterweight at the bottom of the hilt of the thing. I am a pervert for game controllers that feel good, and you cannot beat an old school Joy.
That is actually kind of what the experience of playing it. I think it works great. I am irritated by like, okay, well, I gotta get it. And I know none of this sounds like a big deal, but like I have my Switch sort of behind the TV, right? So I gotta reach back there and slide the little guys off of there. And then I have to put the little attachments onto the things. And I gotta remember to put them back, docked back onto the console at the end of it, because otherwise they won't charge. And then I have these two little Dumaflotchies that I have to go put in a cupboard or something, or just gonna be lying around. It's just like not quite as seamless as the Wii was.
I think I have a good way to set expectations for everybody listening to the show for this game, where they will either like it as much as I do or not as much like I feel like y'all are at. I think y'all have the expectation for this game to be, as Fresh mentioned, you know, Zelda or Mario. I think that you might enjoy this game more, dear listener, if you come in with this as a Miitopia or a Big Brain Academy or even like a Super Mario Party.
Okay, finally, like, we're mentioning one that like people have actually played.
Hey, Big Brain Academy is like a massive, huge
no,
franchise.
You're right. That's true.
Well, what I'm saying is these are like, I think there's kind of two tiers of Nintendo games. They're all the games that I mentioned before this are like, I don't know, like, there's an audience for this, but it's not, again, the capital G gamer. I think it just falls more in that camp. The other thing, and this is, now I'm just, like, being an apologist. I'll admit it right up top. I am curious how if they're using this game as a test balloon for updating or creating a living game in the future. Because we know golf is coming for it. When you get into the online mode, it tells you that there's like new accessories and stuff that you get for playing every week. So we know that they'll be adding to that. And between all of that and then the Mario Kart thing where they're just like basically releasing the new Mario Kart game as DLC over the next 2 years.
They've done that.
We'll see more.
Yeah, I was going
to
say Splatoon 2 is like a living game effectively. Like they more or less have done this in the past. This does not feel a drastically different from what Splatoon 2 was doing, especially with the cosmetics and stuff like that.
It might just be a $40 game where they're just happy that, hey, it's more Wii Sports. And I think
that feels
like,
more
if you want,
true.
If you don't want to throw this down a well because you slaughtered somebody with your old Wii, go for it.
It's so dusty. No one wants to touch that white little cube. It's so dusty.
I actually have one of the black ones, and it is it's more of a sort of modeled hue. Disc golf.
Also, the character creator sucks.
It's not very good.
It's pointless. Although they have my haircut, which is cool. But
you can change it to just your Wii head, which is what I did.
Okay.
Your me head.
Well, find ourselves at the, 8 out of 10, fun factor probably gets a 9. Sorry, I feel like if we don't say that, people do get really pissed off if we do not.
They do.
Yeah, you always got to.
Because they don't know how much fun they're going to have.
Yeah. Our tilt is 5 out of 10. Okay, let's take a quick break and come back and talk more motion control.
I feel like this is sort of a peek back into the past where there was this moment where the entire world was enraptured by motion control, obviously with Kinect and Wii Sports and Move controllers and stuff like that. The question I have for y'all is, what is the like not traditional game input that will happen in the future? Or is that just never going to happen anymore? You know, we've seen plastic guitar controllers. We've seen the motion stuff. We've seen Kinect style like camera stuff. Another moment that's going to happen that will be like out of the norm of traditional games?
Yeah, it's VR. Yeah. VR's, yeah.
I think
it's already happened.
It happened.
It's not going to, it happened. It happened and
well,
it didn't.
Okay, but.
Well, what do you mean? Like that's how you control.
No, VR counts VR. For this, but I do think like, I kind of wonder whether the VR moment has a little bit moved
but
past us.
I don't want to turn this into a discussion about VR, but the votes are in. It's had its shot. Everybody could buy it. It will never be more than a niche.
Again, I wouldn't say that. It's selling more now
than it ever has.
Yes, that's not mainstream. That's not like mass market. Everybody has
one. But I think
it
can be.
TV.
But it's getting, I would say it can definitely get there. I would also say that this technology has not reached its zenith yet. And if you want evidence of that, like, I don't know how, plugged in anyone is to, like, VR developments, but, like...
I'm in the metaverse right now, so...
Oh, okay, cool. Hand emulation, like, one-to-one hand emulation, using the built-in sort of cameras on, like, a Quest headset, is, like, a new and incredibly dope thing, where you can just see a video of somebody, like, picking up a ring off of a table using like really, really, really accurate hand tracking like technology. That's that, to not have it be a third person sort of thing like Kinect and have it be instead like from within looking without, I think is a huge thing that is still changing and still getting better. So
I think Justin, the moment that you're talking about the reason I'm not going to rule out VR entirely is because we are still at a point, even with the Quest, which is a wireless and relatively light, it's still a pretty big headset. The second, and this will take a while, but the second that it is like the weight of my eyeglasses, there is a shot for VR to actually go mainstream. I honestly believe that, yet whether it's like a media viewing device or whatever it is. And so I think it's a way.
I want to use Wii Sports as an example of why I have a problem with this. Wii Sports is incredible. Mm. And it's incredible in the same way that Rock Band was incredible, but I'm going to focus on Wii Sports. Wii Sports, the reason the Wii became such a big deal, and Wii Sports, I think, deserves literally all the credit for like the incredible generational shift that it was that you could have someone over to your house and it's like a fucking Tupperware party. You have someone over to your house and you are selling the Wii to them, right? Like,
sure.
I saw this moment a dozen times, right? When the Wii, someone would come over, they're not into games, they're not big into games, they'd pick up the Wiimote, they'd play tennis with somebody, they'd think, oh, this is actually really fun, I really like this, poof, grandma's got a Wii under the TV, and, you know, and then the cycle continues, the cycle perpetuates. That works equally with kids and, like, families who want to do something together. Like, that is the what was so cool about motion control and why I do think that it will, like, will return in some format. I feel like VR will, unless someone comes up with, like, a very, very smart way, and I can't even, like, sort of fictionalize what this would be, to turn it into a, like, more communal thing that you're doing in a room full of people. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't even share it with my kids because they can't navigate the menus and stuff. So, and I can't.
Yeah,
do that
I'm gonna explain the scenario. This is how I view it. But again, this is 5 to 10. Who knows if it's ever gonna happen? But if it happens, I picture it as I go to my friend's house. I bring 6 glasses. Everyone puts on a glasses.
You are, I assume, like Richie Rich, like the
no, no, the they're sold. That you get them as part of McDonald's Happy Meals.
$15.
Oh, okay, they cost $15. Thank you, guys. This makes perfect sense now.
So, and everyone sits around and has that experience. That is the only scenario where I think we can nail the Tupperware party moment. Wait. I've tried doing it with, like, the Quest, and people have a cool time, but it's, you're right, it's one person at a time, it's slow, other people aren't really seeing what you're seeing, so there's that
It's like, thing. I have to get you into the game, so you don't have to figure out how to navigate the menus, and then once I'm there, I'll take this off my sweaty head. Yes, Plant.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the original question, because VR, that's not what I meant. What I meant was, okay, so what's next motion control gaming moment, is the question, right?
Yes.
Going all the way back. When I say VR, what I mean is people are already designing motion control games in VR. If some of them are good, you could literally just make motion control games for any of the other consoles and just put it on a TV. What I'm saying is there is tons of development happening to create motion control video games and find actual good ones, right? Which was the problem with the Wii, was that there just weren't good ones. Like, outside of Nintendo Switch Wii Sports. Oh my god. And right now, for the first time, a ton of development is going into motion control games, and I think a number of those would work perfectly fine if you put, like, a little webcam on your computer or on your TV, and then you could play those games on your TV.
That's a good point, Blaine. I think that to go in a different route, I feel like the future of motion control, one possible future could be, one of the problems with the solutions that we came up in the 360 era were like, or PlayStation Eye or whatever, is you have to go get this camera, you have to plug it in, you have to have it at the right place, the lighting has to be right, all that stuff is sort of like nascent technology hiccups. I do think there is a reality in which we capitalize on the fact that we are all, like, walking around with incredibly powerful cameras, like, in our pockets, where a dock where you just pop your phone there and that is, like, sensing your body and you're immediately, like, doing motion control stuff. Like, basically, if the Kinect was a phone that you just...
Which is what your phone is now.
Yes, like, right? Like, it's already there.
Most smartphones have Kinect.
Yeah, it's already doing LiDAR and...
Right. We don't have to do any... We don't have to worry about any of that. You just pop it in front of the TV and you're going. Like, I feel like that... If you sanded down a lot of that stuff, I feel like we could have it could bring motion control back in a way that would be, like, fun and accessible again, and not, like, a huge pain in the ass.
Yeah, and to be clear, I wasn't specifically saying only motion gaming in terms of, like, the next generation. I just meant, like, something. What is the new version of the equivalent of motion gaming?
Well, so this is motion still, but I think it's different and closer to what you're talking about, Fresh. Motion controls on your phone, which is a thing phone companies have been, like, flirting with for, I don't know, 5 years, where you don't touch your screen. You, like, can give symbols to it, or, like, air swipes or any of those things. I wouldn't be surprised if we see something novel like that in the next few years.
Someone's got to nail that hologram, am I right?
It's not possible.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Holograms are pretend. That's in Star Trek.
Star Wars came out in the 70s. They seem to have nailed it. Star Wars is real.
Star Wars is real.
Because as we all know, Star Wars is real now.
Perfect ending to B segment.
Yep. Another great slam dunk.
Chris Pine, do we have some reader mail?
Yeah, I got some mail. This one's from Steve. Is local multiplayer dying, or are we grown-ass millennials just out of touch? Is local multiplayer worth saving or reinventing in a post-COVID world? I mean, I feel like a lot of people just play games on Discord together now.
Yeah.
Like, and it feels like local multiplayer to them.
But I also think that, like, if we were in a dorm or, like, you had a big family, local multiplayer would be totally amazing and incredible. Like, that seems like the... It just seems like person to person what your given situation is.
Yeah. But I also think that online multiplayer has become pretty easy and very stable. And local multiplayer was always a pain in the ass.
Sure.
There are certain experiences that you cannot recreate online, especially like a rock band, right? But then again, I don't think we'll ever get it an era like that ever again. So it's changing. I don't know if it's dying.
Yeah, I don't think it's dying.
I think there's like a lot of good stuff. I mean, just yesterday I played Switch Sports and the new Kirby, a local multiplayer with my son. And those are great experiences.
I mean, you also can't discount the fact that like it's been going on for over 2 years. Like the we're talking about a post-COVID world. We've lived in a world for 2 years where like we have been discouraged from being in a room full of people. Like people have changed and adapted. Sure. Like I don't reinventing is probably like, I think there's a much better use case for local multiplayer on like phones. I've had like a better experiences with that recently where like, a game like Out of the Loop, which is great for like you're waiting for dinner to come. So you're playing like a sort of pass the phone type deal. It's also, I feel like we have, this is a small thing, but these sorts of things add up. I feel like local multiplayer has been partially impacted because navigating the various like user accounts and logins and sign-ins and all that stuff with like modern consoles is not as seamless when you're trying to like just play with somebody else. You know what I mean? Like it's there's more hoops to jump through, I feel like, in the modern era of console UI.
It is getting a little better. I think once you've done it once with someone, it's pretty fluid for a number of games, like Fortnite, for example. Once you've become epic friends, jumping into a multiplayer game with them is a total breeze.
Would you say we're epic friends?
That's a good question. I'd have to really consider that. But I think it's game to game. You're right.
Can we talk about this next one? I'm excited.
Okay. This one's from Lisey. Favorite E3 moment? E3 is effectively dead. I mean, it's certainly dead this year. I don't know if it's dead forever.
I mean, it'll be...
It's not looking good.
Right. Not looking good.
I have one.
I think it'll be Jeff 3. Jeff 3, I think, is a better...
G3.
Like, I think it's a... G3 is like a better possible. I just think Keighley will run the table.
He's already doing it with Civil Games Fest.
Right, so exactly. But I feel like if we need this event, it will be Keighley.
Yep.
It will not be the ESRB.
So I will share my favorite E3 moment, which was, I think it was my first E3 ever. And I was attending as a member of the now defunct UGO.com, which doesn't exist anymore. But my boss at the time, Eric Eckstein, was an E3 judge. And for many years, they would have these groups of people that, like, in addition to being able to, like, effectively cut the lines to see the games, you would also, like, have, like, personal demos to, like, go hands-on with the games, stuff like that. And because he was only one person, there were many games to check out. Frequently, you would sort of divide and conquer among the staff who got to like represent the E3 judging for your team. I had the fortune of seeing Half-Life 2, a demo for Half-Life 2. It was like the first E3 I attended. And I just remember going to the like dark room and getting the demo. I think probably Gabe or maybe Chet did the demo, but I just remember it being like so incredible and awe-inspiring, and like it was this narrative story of like you being in an apartment building and it getting raided by like the City 17 cops, and just like such head and shoulders above everything else that I had seen. What I later learned, because the build actually leaked pretty famously for Half-Life 2, was almost all that was smoke and mirrors, as it is for almost every E3 demo, where like the whole thing was very scripted, and you could really like go around and do whatever you wanted, and it wouldn't really impact what was going on screen. But the game did come out and was great, so I forgive them for that forever. But it was an amazing moment when I saw it.
I mean, it's tough to beat Mr. Caffeine. Oh, I don't sure. really know how to beat. I don't know what is better than Mr.
Caffeine.
Do you
want to bring people up to speed on Mr. Caffeine?
Mr. Caffeine was the host of the, I believe, 2011 Ubisoft E3 press conference. And his name was Mr. Caffeine because he was somewhat excitable. And listen, live performing, I get it. It's tough, but it was one of the worst things I've ever seen in my whole life. And I remember covering that like in the joystick like war room was just a lot of just like mouth agape, just disbelief at like, is he really doing the Wayne's World for the fifth time this press conference? Is this happening? And for me, it is moments like those that really stand out in my mind, like the Wii music thing with Ravi Drums, or the time sure. that Peter Moore failed a Rock Band demo live. There's a lot of stuff to pull from there. In terms of good things, I would say when they announced the 3DS and then we went and played it and the 3D like worked.
That was
fucking cool.
That was wild. Ooh,
the only bad thing about that was when they strapped the 3DS.
They were attached to young women, yes.
She ran, yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, by, like, bad about every cords. Way. Yeah.
That's not great.
The two that jump out to me, and, like, I don't know about, like, it's the weird stuff that sticks out to me more than anything else. The two that, like, really, three, very quick. One, I remember Patrick Klepek used to work for MTV, and we were headed over to an MTV party, and he was like, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but the Who is going to be there. And that was, remember that Rock Band party at sure. the yeah. that was wild. That was something else. The Orpheum. Second was Peter Moore when Fable the Journey came out. He made everybody who Peter Molyneux, thank you. He made everybody who saw the game sign a wall swearing that it's not an on-rail shooter, even though it definitely is. That was something else. I did not sign the wall. I refused to. I'm not going to sign it. Look at it, Pete. It's an on-rail shooter, bud. The third one was when Ubisoft was promoting the Avatar video game, which did exist, and James Cameron came out, and everybody's like, oh, fuck, James Cameron. And then James Cameron proceeded to describe the final moments of Avatar in such excruciating detail that everyone in the room, you could feel it. Everyone in the room's like, how is he still fucking talking about this? Like, it went on. Go look it up sometime. It's unbelievable. The man spoke for like 15 minutes of in the most boring fashion possible about like, and then there's like these dragons, right? It fully had like 7-year-old telling you about their dream energy, right? And then grandma came over and she had marshmallow hands, and like it was unbelievable.
Mine is also tied to Avatar. I went to the behind closed doors demo, and John Landau, who's the other producer of Avatar, was showing it, and there was a 100-inch TV, the first in the world. Whoa. And they spent so much time letting us know how great it was that we got to see a 100-inch TV. And I had heard that they were going to screen Avatar. This is like many, many months before it comes out. Nobody had even seen footage of it yet. And I went up to the publicist and was like, hey, little birdie told me that you're going to show Avatar. And I would hate to have to like tell people about that. And he's like, how about you don't threaten me ever again? And I will put you on a bus to go see Avatar. I saw, it was 15 minutes of footage. And I saw it with like basically people who worked on the game. And I came back to the UGO office where Russ Frushtick worked. And I told everybody, this is the single most important thing to happen in cinema since The Wizard of Oz. And let me tell you, I was probably not right. I mean, probably,
it's cool. It's a cool. It's movie. Cool,
but I think I was a little bit. I think I had a little bit too much of the hype juice.
Can I just, because it's one of my favorite things, and I found it real quick. Can I play you guys just a few moments of James Cameron talking about Avatar at E3 2009?
Oh boy,
Jesus!
Oh no.
Primitive bows and arrows and primitive weapons and that sort of thing, but who ultimately proved to be much wiser than we are. The Na'vi are 10 feet tall, blue skin, striped like tigers. They have long tails. They're quite fierce looking, and they can be ferocious warriors when they're provoked. But normally, as when humans are not trampling their planet, they live harmoniously in their forest environment. Now, humans can't breathe the air on Pandora, so in the major conceit of the story is that it was decided to create...
It's unreal, right? It's unreal. This video is 6 minutes long. It's part one of two. Like, imagine it. What is wilder than someone describing to you an Avatar?
Look, he didn't go into the hair fucking, so that is a big win.
That's true. Yeah. That's true, which I think they cut out of Disney Plus. Wait, really quick, can I share my honest favorite E3 moment personally?
Yeah.
Sure.
I was doing a stand-up, like direct to camera. It was the end of E3. It's been a hard week. I'm talking directly to camera. I'm doing my like fourth or fifth take about, I don't know, some new Assassin's Creed. And out of nowhere, this dude just walks directly in front of me and the camera, right between us, looks directly at me, boops my nose, and just goes, "Too cute," and then walks away. And it was the single most life-affirming thing that's ever
that's
happened.
So that's so good, really dude. Special.
It made me
you needed
so
that,
happy.
Didn't you? You needed that.
Because I was not too cute at that point.
But you needed that.
But it don't really made me feel too cute. It was, I've never forgotten it.
I'll miss E3. You should know, though, that like if you hear journalists opining for E3 and like mourning it, I think that that's like, it was a fun time to be a video game fan, but really, it was a really fun, like, especially if you worked remotely, it was really important. I mean, to have that sort of time where you're with people, like, that's where a lot of the joy really of E3 was, not to memorialize it for too long, but like seeing people that I only talked to virtually for like a week and having that experience with them, that's what, like, I feel like most journalists that you hear talk about. Plus, it's like very hard, satisfying work for a week. That is what I will miss, like the communal nature of it. Like you just can't beat the fun of being in a room full of really smart, funny people who love the same thing you do. And like watching a press conference in that room full of people. I mean, it's like it beyond fun. Like that is the, one of the absolute highlights of the job that I will always look back on fondly.
To really hammer home the metaphor, doing that all day and then everyone going to the exact same hotel and hanging around a pool that is shaped like a coffin. Yeah. Truly
grim.
A real
fun time. Anybody been playing anything else?
I've been playing the second season of Halo Infinite, which just launched yesterday.
Is it good?
Booted it up. Season one lasted 6 months, which is a very long time for a season of a living game to last, but it lasted 6 months. And season two is also scheduled to last 6 months, which seems also quite long, but it has added a new mode called Last Spartan Standing mode, which is effectively a free-for-all mode where like 12 or so people are dropped into a very large map, like one of the big maps. And it kind of is a mix of like gun game where as you get kills, your like gear upgrades. And then eventually it turns into a battle royale where like a big circle shows up and starts shrinking to sort of like ensure that everyone finds each other. Super fun, really satisfying. It, you know, I'm always kind of blown away at how good the like minute to minute core of Halo Infinite is, because it really is strong. The trappings, the like outside of it, still feels like they have a lot of work ahead of them in terms of progression and unlocks and whatever else. But the actual minute to minute.
Hey, it's only been 6 months. Give them time.
Well, and it got that year long delay. So it does genuinely make me wonder what the game was like a year and a half ago at that point. But yeah, it is fun. I mean, if you liked the core of Halo Infinite, definitely worth just trying that mode, because it does kind of breathe new life.
Seem to be a lot of people playing it? Is it?
What?
Is there a lot of people playing it, does it feel like? Or you haven't?
Well, I know their user number, I think this is not scientific, but I know their Twitch numbers have been pretty dismal, at least towards the end of the season. And I think a lot of that has to do with, like, they just weren't releasing new content for a very, very long time. I would imagine it saw something of a spike for the beginning of season two. I mean, I don't have a problem getting into games for what it's worth, but, you know, maybe if I was in a more remote location, it would be different. But I had fun. I enjoyed it.
I played Not Words,
yeah,
which you suggested last week.
That is all I've been playing is Not Words.
It's really, really good. I played through like all, I think I've almost played through all the existing puzzles. And now my wife, Sydney, who like will every once in a while get fixated on an iOS game. For a while it was Blendoku. And then she finished that. And then she played the Benjamin Morris, is that what it is? The paint company. Did a Bendoku, which is their like take on Blendoku, but now she's deeply into Not Words, and it's cool because with the daily puzzle, it's got a little bit of that Wordle energy where it's like, I haven't done the Not Words today,
right?
And we, you know, we'll hang out and do it. It's
Not Words, just to remind people. I mentioned it last week. It was the it's like a blend of Sudoku meets a crossword puzzle, basically.
It can be a little tough to get started.
It can, yeah.
You have to, which like both per puzzle and then also like just generally speaking, you have to kind of, you realize you don't necessarily have the synapses in your brain that you think you have, that you think would be useful in this scenario. But I'm starting to get some tactics and stuff.
You
that,
need
that
to
help.
Be okay with guessing and yes. being okay if that's not the right guess and then acclimating to that.
It very much is built into that. Like it does not feel like a failure when you put in the wrong thing. It's sort of just like noting it, like it's part of the experience.
The hint system in the game is really smart too, because you yeah. get a certain amount of hints, either three or if you have like purchased the full version of the game, six hints. And every time you solve a puzzle, you get one more added to that pile. And all the hint does is you choose like a column or a row, and it gives you the crossword puzzle hint for that thing. So it doesn't tell you explicitly what the word is, or it doesn't tell you, it doesn't solve it for you. But instead it would say like, you know, whatever, I can't generate a fake crossword puzzle hint, but it's very clever, and it's a good way to get a foothold on a puzzle that you're really struggling with without feeling like you have like given up or anything like that.
Yeah, I really dig it.
I really haven't been playing anything other than that.
Y'all, Stanley Parable Ultra Deluxe. I'm not going to talk too much
about
it.
Just downloaded it while we've been recording.
We don't want to... Yeah, no spoilies. It is fan-fucking-tastic. It's so good. It is... It's incredible. Whether you have not played... if you have never played Stanley Parable, great news. When you start the game, it'll ask you, and it will help you out so that you... So you see everything in the right order, I guess is how I'd put it.
What if I haven't played it in like 10 years? Should I?
And so that was my next thing. So that's me. I barely remember it. I would say you should still hit the I have played it option.
Okay.
It'll be clear for you how you can navigate the game in a way that meets your needs.
And you...
Yeah, I don't think any.
Don't read about this game
at all.
Don't read about it at all. Just like take it at 100% face value, and just go in like without expectations, and just sort of let it wash over you. It is, it's really something fucking something else.
Yeah, and the team that made this. I mean, it's the original creator is the writer, but then the studio is the team that did Accounting. I believe is what it was called, which was any of y'all play this? Speaking of VR games,
no,
it was this game that was by what's the dude who co-created Rick and Morty?
Yeah. Justin Roiland.
Justin Roiland.
Yeah. It's a VR game that he made. With the studio, and it's like delightful. But this is made with somebody who like specializes in making excellent video games and is not VR. And I think benefits from both those things. I'm not going to say anything else. We'll do a spoily episode or like hidden B segment or whatever in a couple of weeks. So it'll give time for everybody listening to play it before then. But strongly, strongly recommend that you play it. If you are the sort of person who likes to play the games that we talk about at the end of the year, especially when they're like high up in our final bracket, I think you should play this game because I think it will be in that zone.
Cool.
I wanted to thank the following people for writing reviews for the Besties on Apple Podcasts. Tlilubs, Red the Rose, Alex Orlum, Dewey Ocelot, and Pirate Rock. Thank you for writing reviews to the Besties on Apple Podcasts. Thank you to everyone else who also wrote reviews on Apple Podcasts. We greatly, greatly appreciate it.
Very quickly to recap the games that we played this week. I mean, just a lot of Nintendo Switch sports, you know. And then we just mentioned the stuff that we also played. Halo Infinite, Not Words, Stanley Parable. Next week, we're going to be doing a tier ranking episode for Star Wars. Is it because of May the 4th? Well, it's a little after that. Is it because of the Obi-Wan Kenobi TV show? Well, it's a little bit before that. We want to make sure that you have Star Wars all month long.
Like, much like Christmas, just not we want to take Star Wars from a day-long holiday to a month-long observation of this cultural...
How are we going to narrow this down? That's a lot of Star Wars games.
No, we'll just do every one. Yeah. This will not be a bracket. We're not going to pick the best. We're going to rank.
We're going to tier list.
It's going to be fun.
That's it.
Take us home, Justin.
Thank you so much for listening to the Besties. We hope you've enjoyed yourself. And be sure to join us again next week for the Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
Besties!